Oh, do we all have a paper? Okay, no papers. Pass those on back. It'll be a little bit till we get to them. So everybody needs to have a paper for sure and a pencil of some kind. Now, when I was a young budding artist, now I haven't budded very far yet. My art is very basic yet, but I love to draw, and I love to draw all different things, and I love to paint. But when I was a budding artist, I was maybe 8 years old, and I had this overwhelming passion for drawing deer. And all deer that a person should draw have gigantic horns and are in, you know, kind of a place to be shot. And so I had worked for days on my masterpiece. And it was $2. They were huge. Their antlers were... And it was my masterpiece. It was beautiful. And as all budding artists, you know, when they finally do make their masterpiece, they want a little recognition for it. So I took it to my brother. And my brother does not really know about tact and about budding artists and about, you know, the pain and hurt that these things can cause and about how much we love our work and all just all details that you know, my brother didn't understand. He said, "Wow, that really looks like... it looks like two really overweight dogs with horns on them." I'm glad at least he recognized they were living animals. But I mean, looking back in hindsight, but at the time I was crushed, you know. And it was tragic, but I kept drawing. And I actually, because of the hurt and pain I felt, I lost that masterpiece and destroyed it, and went on to draw more deer. And I was going to bring you my folder of all my drawings, which is mostly deer to this day. And actually, it's maybe good I didn't bring it, because now I can shade the truth a little bit about it. I have some really good deer drawings in there. I mean, first class deer. I mean, the motion is just there. There's an artist, Wayne Thibault. I think I'm saying it right. He said, "Draw until you get it right." And I want y'all to do that too, because sometimes we give up and we feel like maybe we're school teachers and we should know better, and we don't get it right, and so then we stop drawing and we don't teach our students to draw. So I'm going to teach you today a little bit about how to do art and how to teach art and how to draw yourselves. But the first thing I'm going to do, I started a little bit early, I realized that, because I have a lot of stuff I want to tell you. I'm sorry.
We've got more
coming?
Yeah.
I know, it's too much for me. So first I want to do is I want to tell you a little bit about why you should teach art. See, a lot of teachers don't teach art. They just maybe have a craft class or play volleyball. And I don't want you to do that. I want you to teach art. And I want you to teach them how to draw. Now, there's other kinds of art. In this community, there's an old man named Ernest Berkey. And he does art with food. And he takes watermelons and cantaloupes and strawberries, and he kind of cuts around on them and sticks them all together and makes these beautiful... I don't know what they are, but they're really pretty. And that's art. You know, If you taught in this community, it might be a good idea to get him in here to do your art for, to do an art class of food art for you. You might tell stories for art. I believe telling stories is a real art, and I think maybe you should incorporate that into your class, you know, and include some food, because stories and food kind of go together, and teach them how to tell stories and how to look at their audience and how to build a little plot and how to, that's an art. There's many. Singing is an art. We kind of cover that in our programs. I'll tell you another art. You probably won't do it in your school, but just so you know, it's out there. It's older than Christianity by a long ways. Is the art of dancing. In Bangladesh, they dance a lot, and they don't dance like we think of dancing with boys and girls and kind of weird things going on. In Bangladesh, they dance, they learn to dance, and they learn to tell a story with their dance. And it's very, very hard to learn to dance their way. Boys dance, girls dance, but they don't dance together. And they tell with a song and with emotions, they tell a historical happening. And it is amazing and beautiful. And if we lived in Bangladesh, I think that would be a good thing to teach in your school. But because we live in America, I don't think it probably would be. But just, it's an art, and it's a beautiful art. The first reason that I have for you to teach art is because God loves art. Go outside of this door. You can look out kind of over this pale pastel, smoky, dirty. I mean, this valley. It's a really beautiful valley sometimes, but right now it's not so pretty. But you see the trees. You see a bird. You see the sky. You see each other. God loves art, and he loves creating things, and he did for our benefit. And you know, we're built in the image of God, and we like that too. We like to create. We like to look at beautiful things. Art is part of you, and I want to teach you how to do that, and to do art. Art has a lot of power. Now, I saw this picture one time, and I'm going to draw it for you. And this picture has a tremendous amount of power. I don't know if any of the great painters of the day could have conveyed more sheer power to you from this picture. And I'm going to draw it, and you'll see why. This is not original with me. I wish it was. I mean, we've all done things like this. This was drawn by a 7-year-old boy. Here's the 7-year-old boy. Here's his mother. Her hair is a little longer. She has a dress. That's how we know she's the mother. And she's got her legs like all people do. Here's the father. He's got a beard. We know he's the father. Here's his big sister. That's pretty close. Isn't that incredible? I don't know if Picasso could have done any better. I know what his sister is like, at least how he perceives his sister to be. And you know, that is really simple, but I conveyed a thought into your heads that was powerful. And a child did that. Even currently here, I did it myself. When you learn to do art, to draw or to paint, you there's a power there. You know, a piece of paper is worthless, but when you paint a masterpiece on it, it becomes unbuyable, incalculably valuable. Art has power. The third thing I want to tell you, a reason, is because learning to draw is learning to see things. And I have a little quote here that shows that very clearly. This is by Frederick Frank, and he wrote, "In order to really see, to see even ever deeper, ever more intensely, hence to be fully aware and alive, that I draw what the Chinese call the 10,000 things around me. Drawing is the discipline by which I constantly rediscover the world. I have learned that what I have not drawn, I have never really seen. And that what I start drawing, that when I start drawing an ordinary thing, I realize how extraordinary it is. Sheer miracle. Now, I might as well introduce it now. If you ever get a chance to read this book, I highly recommend it. Highly, highly recommend it. Especially to you teachers. There may be some portraits in there that might not be quite, you know, the best, but to an adult teacher, I highly, highly recommend this book, Drawing on the Right Side of Your Brain. And in this book, it tries to teach you how to see things. And then once you can see them, you can draw them. And it has you, I'll just share this for free here quick before I go on. There's one exercise in that book that's really neat. You know, if you draw with the left side of your brain, this is just too big of a thought to try to cram in this little moment. But if you draw with the left side of your brain, that is the side of you that is kind of literal and full of presupposed ideas. So if I would tell you to draw a hand and you would just reach down and draw your hand, more than likely, if you don't know how to draw, it's going to look kind of like this. You know, we have four fingers. Here's a wrist, probably. And then we're going to have a thumb. And then we got, you know, your basic hand, right? Well, hands are intricate pieces of work. And what she has you do in this book is put a paper behind you. And don't look at it. You have a pencil in your hand. And then hold your hand out in front of you, and take maybe 40 minutes to do this or something, and draw behind you, never looking at your paper, and draw every detail of your hand. And if you hold your hand out in front of you right now and just look at it, there are details, the skin, the little lines in your skin, the fingers, the creases, it's amazing. Well, anyway, you get done drawing your hand back here, and it looks like if somebody was scribbling. But you're teaching your brain to shift, to see the details, to draw correctly. But that was just for free. I didn't even have that in my notes. Sorry about that. He talks about drawing the 100 things around you. As an artist, when you learn to draw, you will see those things. If you sit in this room, you look at the person in front of you, the back of their head, or the desk, or your whatever, there's details, there's, you know, the curve of your neck, you see the 10,000 things around you that you miss if you don't look for them. And that's beautiful. You know, you think of an old man sitting there, the wisdom in his face, the lines, and it's a beautiful thing that you will see when you become an artist, and you all are going to become an artist. I feel it. And the fourth thing I have here that's really important, it's really important, especially if you see very little value in art. Some people, to some little boys and little girls, learning to draw is kind of, it opens a door for them that doesn't really get opened otherwise. Learning to draw, learning to excel there, that's something that's kind of in them. And they like to draw, and they want to draw, and they find expression doing that drawing where they don't very many places. If you don't teach them, if you don't ever encourage that gift from God to them, they might not use it, and they might lose it, and that's tragic. You know, and sometimes even bad behavior. Well, I'll tell you, I'll borrow a little story Dan Sullivan told me. In the school down there in Belize, they have a little woodworking shop beside the school. And part of their kind of craft, home ec, I don't know what kind of you would call it, class, the boys all go down to the shop and they build little things out of wood. And there's one little boy who loved working in the shop, building tables and sanding and varnishing, doing all that stuff. And he, and Dan told me, he said he thinks he came back and slogged his way through math and poured his heart out in his English and did English and did everything he could just so that he'd be allowed to come to school and go work in the shop. And sometimes drawing is like that for your students. Teach them to draw. It's an outlet it's really wonderful. Now, I want to speak the rest of the time to you, and we're going to do a little drawing. And I'm going to tell you some different ways and things to do. But first, I want to do a little test for you to see if you're actually capable of this, because some of you might not be. And I'd hate to bore you with the rest of the class if you're not. So I want you to do first write your name, and then I will on the top of your paper, and then we'll proceed from there. I'm sorry. Don't be too stressed. I won't show anybody these papers. I actually won't even collect them. It's all right. I won't collect your papers. Do y'all have your name written? If you do have your name written, you have demonstrated to me and to this class that you have the eye and hand coordination, that you have the motor skills to be an artist. You do. Now, if you can't write your name, you might need to go into more painting than art. Maybe more like modern art, you know, with the swirls and things. I mean, you still can be an artist, but you might not be a drawing type of artist. I like to draw. I also like to paint, but my first love is drawing, so I'm going to talk to you mostly about drawing. Was there anybody not able to write their name? Good. I bet you were, because you can draw really good, even without a name. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to learn to see things. And I'm going to try to give you some tools so that you go into your class, and when you give your students a blank piece of paper, or you're trying to plan an art class, it doesn't look overwhelming to you, and give you some simple tools to try to build learning to draw. And, you know, I wish I could give you a couple hours of this, but it's not even quite an hour, so we're going to do what we can while we can. We must learn to see things. I won't do this for the sake of time, but if I ask you to draw a picture of a boy and a girl standing side by side, well, I'll just draw what a lot of people draw. Actually, why don't you do that? Draw a picture of a boy and a girl standing side by side, and I'll draw one up here too. And I only take about 30 seconds doing this. Just draw from your mind what you think a boy and a girl look like. Okay, there's mine, right? There's a boy and a girl. Did you know that now y'all are teachers and you're probably doing a much, much better job, and that's all right. But did you know that most adults, if you ask them to draw a boy and a girl, they're going to draw something like that. And when they learned to draw that good was when they were about 8 or 9 years old, more or less. Sometimes we don't progress much farther in our drawing than we did when we were 8 or 9. And why is that? Well, I think it's if you never were taught any math after you were 8 or 9, you probably wouldn't get far beyond, you know, subtraction or whatever you learn at 8 or 9. We're not taught. And I leave, you know, in this room we have the potential to teach. It's beyond belief. So we're gonna learn how to do this. We're gonna learn how to in learning how to draw. We're gonna want to start with some basic shapes, so that we're all comfortable with drawing basic shapes. Because everything you see is made of basic shapes, and if you learn how to do them, you can put them together to make anything you want. Now I'm gonna do something that I did a lot in my classroom. I'm gonna start drawing up here. And I want you to follow along with my drawing. If you can, it's going to be very, very simple. And I want you just to follow along, rough sketching, without knowing what I'm drawing. Because sometimes, if I would tell you to draw, say, well, you know, I won't even go there. Because we have these preconceived notions about what things look like and what, you know, I draw a box and it's supposed to be square. We're not going to do that. I want you to draw just what you see me drawing up here, and we're going to see what we come up with. This is very, very simple. And I think we're going to do just granddad. After erase my Picasso there. So we're going to start with kind of a line. We're all going to do a line. And if it's not straight, that's all right. My drawing's going to probably look like a nightmare, but that's all right. When you're drawing in front of your students on the whiteboard, which all of you, I hope, are going to do this year, it's going to look a little weird. But you know what? That's a good thing, because your students are really self-conscious about their drawings. And if your drawings look a little dumb, great. Helps them so they don't feel self-conscious. And if you're like me, you're probably going to have students that far surpass you in their art. You know what? That's what we want. That's what we want to see happen.
Is there an extra pencil up
there? Extra pencil. I can use it here. We all good? You can do a pen too. If you mess up, it's no big deal. It's a lot harder with a pen or a marker, because we're going to do a little bit of shading, but no worries. Oh, you know what? If you do have a pen, it is going to be a pen, because I'm hoping to be able to erase some lines here. Oh, well, just follow the spirit. It's all right if we don't. So we're going to go like this. We're going to. Well, shading is hard to do with a sharpened marker. Okay, so we have up here, we have this piece of Swiss cheese. You know, it looks very, very primitive. I told you it's Swiss cheese, just in case some of you, you know, were wondering. You would be amazed if you would go ahead and take an art class of doing this and give your students and show them how to shade it and show them where the light is coming from. You know, your light is coming from up here somewhere. This is kind of in shadow. These are in shadow just a little bit. And all of a sudden, they have a piece of cheese. They have a piece of Swiss cheese that makes them really happy. I mean, when I was in fifth grade, my teacher didn't actually do art classes. We played recess, and that was really fun. But I wish she'd have taught us how to draw. I would have been really tickled to be able to draw a piece of Swiss cheese like this in an art class. And to all of you artists, that looks pretty lame. But it's not to your fifth grader. And you want to do simple things like that to show them how shapes put things together, to encourage them, and show them how to. We'll do a little bit more. And follow along here. This one, you can follow if you have a pen, go ahead and draw it, just to kind of get used to the goings on. But it's not going to look that great, because you're not going to be able to erase. And that's just fine. Nobody's ever going to look at those papers. When you leave this room, you can chew them up piece by piece if you want, and destroy them. I mean, you're gonna be safe. So let's just start right here with another basic shape. This is an upside down triangle, which is pretty easy to draw. And we're just gonna kind of fill in the corners here. And you're gonna want to teach your students, when they're drawing something like this, to sketch really lightly in the beginning, so that they can erase when the time comes. all of a sudden we have a turnip. Now, a turnip is not very hard to draw, but sometimes if you just tell a fourth grader to draw something like a turnip, he's going to have a hard time getting the proportions right. And if you do something in a basic triangle, it's very easy. I'll do another one in a triangle, and this one's even cooler.
With simple shapes, building their
And if you're doing this for your class, do it really slowly. And do something like this, and then walk around the room and look and make sure everybody's keeping up and give them encouragement. Give them loads of encouragement. Because for some reason, we're really self-conscious when we draw. And we're self-conscious of the guy next to us looking over. Did you see what he's drawing? That's really hard. We don't want to do that to each other. Don't ever do it to your students. They'll never, ever draw. If you as a teacher say, that's not a very good draw. They know it even if we don't say it, if we act like it. They're never, ever going to draw. You just made so that they won't draw. So don't do that. Don't make it so they won't draw. And something about drawing on a whiteboard keeps a person humble. My students, we're always very, very kind about my drawings. Oh, I'm sorry, you probably can't see very well. I'm sorry. But they always kind of forgave and were like, we know you tried, Mr. Aaron, and so we're not gonna, and it makes a person feel really good. So your students will do the same to you, I guarantee it. It wasn't going so great, guys. I had to, imagine it would go better. I always did on my my paper, but. So we have kind of this very primitive fox with kind of close set eyes. It's an old variety. We don't have them anymore, but back in your grandfather's day, they were around very thickly here in the Willamette. And had this kind of off-shaped nose, but that's how they were. Probably why they went extinct. But if you take your time, even a fifth grader can do this. And he's going to be so happy when he's done drawing a fox, and you're going to see him drawing foxes all in his books because he can draw a fox face now. And then all of a sudden when he's drawing a dog later, a really pointy-nosed dog, he would have some tools to draw the dog. And this basic shape, you can make a right side up triangle really lightly, and then you can it's as simple as can be. You can make a really, really simple, kind of tree deal. This is really simple. I can do better, a lot better than this, but I'm just showing you. Sometimes a fifth grader or even an eighth grader, well, that's really awful. Don't pay attention to that.
Mr. Aaron, you can do it.
but even just the shape of a basic little fir tree, can make them happy. Start with the basic, simple stuff. Start with the shapes. Get yourself a drawing book. Get yourself a lot of drawing books. Look at them. Look for shapes in there. Look for simple drawings. And as your students build, you know, they can draw cheese, they can draw turnips, they can draw foxes. They have about everything they need for life. Or after a while, they will. They can, you know, you'll keep expanding that comfort zone. Keep showing them more things that they can do. And they get better. I do draw better than this. I do wish I could show you, but, you know, it's the way it is. So, another thing to do, the second thing I have here to do, I have a whole bunch of things, I hope that we'll have time for them, is a couple years ago, Jonathan Erb's father-in-law was here, and he showed us how to do letters. Absolutely fascinating. How to do 3D letters. So simple. And fascinating. I'm just going to do a really quick an A, or I'll do an A. And it's just really, really basic, and your students will love this. If you're anywhere, I don't know where Jonathan Erb's father-in-law lives, but if he's anywhere in your vicinity, get him. I don't even know his name. Ask Jonathan Erb; he would know. Get
Leon Mar.
Get him to come to your school and teach you how to do these letters. Oh, which brings another thing. If you're in a community, look in your community, look for old people, look for your greatest resource in teaching is other people. It's not your own mind, it's not your books, it's other people, and don't forget that. And look in your community for somebody who likes to draw, somebody who likes to paint, somebody who likes to do art, and get them to come and show your students how to do it. It's important that they get taught how to do art, and if you can't teach them, which you can, but let's say you're too busy, right? You're too busy. You can teach them, but you're too busy. Get somebody else in that has time to do it. So I'm going to do a really quick A here, and the basic theory goes for all letters. You don't have to be very accurate to have it look really neat. So we have an A, and we make it kind of fat. You really need chalk to do this correctly, but we don't have chalk. We have a whiteboard, so we're going to go like this. So we have like this A that we use up all our marker to fill in. All right, and then you pick somewhere on the paper, just kind of your choice, where you want the light source to come from. I'm sorry that y'all, my huge body is here in the way, blocking most of your views, but this is just a basic A with kind of wide sides, and what you do is you pick a light, let's have our light source be right here, and just draw a little dot right there just for your mental. And let's pretend the light is shining down here. Let's draw a little line kind of away from each corner, kind of a little bit away from your light source. It's got a little long. So we have some little lines. It doesn't look very impressive, but that's the next step, right? And then we connect them. Actually, these are kind of long. Yeah, shorten her down a little bit to get you a better perspective. And you just kind of connect the lines. Wow, so primitive. Hold it. You really need to have a piece of chalk. I'll just demonstrate. If you do have a chalkboard, get a piece of chalk and hold it on edge like this. And let's just say it's a short piece of chalk, maybe this long. And you hold it on edge, and you pick an angle. Let's say our angle is going to be like this. And when we write the A, we're going to draw it like this. Not changing the angle of your chalk to draw your A. And that'll give you a much more realistic 3D letter. But on a whiteboard, you just kind of got to do your thing, you know? And if you write your whole name like this, it does look sort of 3D, pretty 3D. And students love that stuff. I mean, we want them to be out there painting train cars someday. No, we don't. We want them to be doing artwork in books or something, but we don't want them painting train cars. But it is pretty neat how to do that. One thing, students want to draw what they love, right? And listen for that. I asked a little boy here at these meetings what were some good art projects that he liked. And he told me a number of them. He said a dog is a really good thing to draw. And that's so true. A little boys love dogs. Dogs are easy to draw. Open up your encyclopedia to dog. Full of dogs. Little girls could maybe draw like the little fluffy dogs. They'd probably like that. And draw some on the board and do that. He also said fish are a good option. And I noticed that in my classroom. Fish are fun to draw. Their lines are clean. They have scales. Scales are really fun to draw. You can kind of do this little number. And you can just kind of, you know, not with a whole lot of science, you can really have fun with scales. And if you do like a big goldfish, that's really fun. Sometimes you can even work on, you know, 3D styles of arts, things that students love. This little dog. You know, this is not very exciting, but it's really cool. He's got little ears coming down. You know, and you could really go places with this little dog. He made this for me, and this is really cool. If you take a piece of paper and you would fold it like this, all of a sudden you'd have kind of this 3D dog head. And you could go into this dog and you could draw a dog face on it. And what you want to do is you want to listen for your listen to your students and listen to what they love and then do that. Follow their dreams. If my teacher would have been listening to me, he would have heard, well, they did listen to me and they had wonderful teachers, but they didn't draw. But she would have heard that I like drawing deer. And we would have drawn deer. Maybe we would have. I don't know. It would have been great. But students like, so let's say I wanted to draw deer, and my deer always look like kind of fat, overweight dogs with horns. What my teacher should have told, what you should tell your students is take a picture of a deer that you like, and if you can't really get it, if you somehow can't transfer it from one sheet to the next, take a pencil and a ruler and carefully draw a grid over your work. So let's say we want to copy off this A, and this A is just, which we don't mind at all. I mean, this is not a big deal to copy. Let's say this is an intricate deer. We're going to take our ruler, and we're going to draw faint lines through the picture both ways. And then we're going to have another piece of paper and draw the exact same grid on it, same spacing, the same everything. And then we'll sit here and we'll transfer over through the grid, and we'll get a deer that the proportions are right. And what you're doing, I'll tell you what's happening in your brain while you're doing that really quickly before we go on. In your brain, the right-hand side of your brain is transferring exactly what it sees on the other paper. Your left side of the brain is telling you just draw. So let's say we're doing this A. It says just draw this A thing and get it over with. We're efficient. We're trying to get your right-hand side is thinking, if you have to do it in a grid, it's thinking, so we have in this square, we have a little corner in the corner of the square, or we have just this little tuft on the end of a tail, or whatever it is, and you transfer exactly what you see over onto your paper. Great tool. Another thing to do, a fun thing to do, is pick an artist's life, study it, and I called my Aunt Rose, kind of in a panic last week. I had these massive amounts of notes and none of it seemed to be coming together. And she's a great art teacher, probably one of the greatest that I know that is alive. And she told me a lot of things. She told me one thing she did in her class is she picked an artist, Van Gogh. She picked Van Gogh, and she told about his life a little bit. Then they looked at some of his paintings, and one of them was a painting of his bedroom. I don't know if any of you have ever seen Van Gogh's picture of his bedroom, right? It's super, super basic. It's kind of, you know, Van Gogh has some kind of really bright colors and little shapes of his bedroom. Well, then her students went home and looked at their bedrooms and came back and they drew their bedrooms. And she said it was very fun and her students enjoyed it. And I think that's a great way to connect them to people, to artists, and to also draw. Another thing, get children's books and look at the art in children's books and copy that and do that in your class, because children's books generally have very simple line drawings, often, and they're easy to copy, and their proportions are often pretty close to right. And what we're trying to teach our students how to do is see the shapes, the spatial, where it goes on the page, get your proportions right, and then you can add all the detail later. So Fred and Ted Go Camping, great book, by the way. I recommend it. We have Ted here on a little red car. Looks like fun. It also looks really easy to draw. And when your students can draw Ted in his car, they're going to be really happy. This is just basic circles, basic lines, and it's not a bad drawing. And even a young student can do that. And show them storybooks. Show them the pictures. Show them, maybe do one in our class. Maybe put a grid over one of these. Maybe, you know, do that and have that be a resource for you. Another thing, if you're a little farther down the road, illustrate their own little stories. You know, make it, maybe as a class, make a book and illustrate the pages. My brother told me, I asked my little brother what he liked best about art. He said one time his teacher, he did this a number of times, and he would read maybe two or three sentences, and they were supposed to draw it. And he really, really liked that. So let's just think a little bit. You know, let's say we know how to draw a fox. Let's say maybe after you taught them how to draw a fox, you go and you one day you say in your class that you wanted to draw, you know, sentences you say, and you could maybe say that the fox was peering out from between the evergreen bushes looking at an overweight chicken. Oh, students love drawing things like overweight chickens. Pecking at a grasshopper. You know, and they know how to do a fox. Oh, and they remember, we can do evergreen trees. Yeah, a little better than that. And then you have an overweight chicken you can really splurge on, and a grasshopper. And then you can add the sun and the mountains in the background and all the other things that you're supposed to add to pictures as a child. Fun. Another thing my aunt told me, she said she did a whole bunch of art classes with her students, and they were all very good. She told me a lot of them. And she said, she asked them at the end of the year what their favorite thing that they did was. And they said it was this. Now, you can't see this very well, but what they did is they took their hands on a piece of paper, and they drew around them. Well, I'll just kind of demonstrate here. So imagine I have a really big hand and it goes kind of like this. Because so you all can see, this is why I'm doing it. Ooh, this looks awful. Wow. Let's say this is a giant's hand and a little misproportioned with a massive thumb. But what they did then is they drew carefully on their paper, they traced their hand, and then they took their pencil and they lightly cut it all up into little pieces. You know, however they wanted. This is completely, and they spent a while doing this, and then each little shape, there's no fingers? Yeah, I have no fingers. So in each little shape, then they would do whatever they wanted. Little curly cues, and maybe they did stripes, and they colored them, and maybe they had a chevron going through this. That's a chevron, right? I think that's a chevron. Like a zigzaggy thing going. And they loved it. And so maybe after you've been teaching them for a long time about, you know, you've done foxes, you've done trees, you've done deer, you've done apples, you've done, then you can maybe let them take a break and do this hand business. And I'm guessing it'd be really fun. Well, I really want to have a little bit of time for thoughts here. I'm just going to go, you know what? Oh, we should do this yet. If you ever teach them how to paint, the first thing that you should have them do is a color wheel, just to help them know how colors work. So we have here a finished color wheel, and all colors are made of three colors, which are yellow, blue, and red. And so what you do, you have your paints, you have your yellow paint, your blue paint, and your red paint, and they paint this, they make a wheel like this to draw it, and then they paint one yellow, one blue, and one red. And then they mix their paints together. Like here, they would mix the yellow and the red, and in the center here, they would put, it would turn into orange, and they'd put it here. Right here, they'd mix the red and the blue, turn into purple, go right here. red and blue. I'm getting confused here. But you kind of see the point. Yellow and blue make green. And then they understand those colors, and something about matching colors, which I don't understand, is usually colors across from each other are ones that really go well together. So red and green, blue and orange, these colors supposedly match. I don't know why, but they do. That's why I always wear my yellow shirt with my orange pants. No, that'd be wrong. Whatever it is, I do the right thing. Ask people. If I give you any advice, talk to people. Ask them how it worked for them. Talk to your mom. Ask her what she did in school. Talk to everybody you know if you want to do a... Oh, dear. Okay. What are your thoughts? I'm so sorry. Do you have any thoughts or questions? Yes.
On the lettering thing, when your students are doing that at their desks, just use broken crayons.
Great idea.
Most school rooms have tons of broken crayons.
Did you hear that? When you're doing the lettering thing at your desk, you don't have to worry about the chalk. Use broken crayons. Get your length. Then you can hold it. You can hold your broken crayon and find your angle and then draw your A. And then you can do it more correctly. Anything else? Did you have something? Anybody else have something that they want to add? Okay. I'll tell you one more thing quickly before we dismiss you. If you want to teach your students how to draw, more important than your method, more important than your skill level, more important than a whole lot of things, is that you care enough to look dumb and to get up in front of your students and to draw things for them, and then to praise them for their work. Go around and make sure that you praise your students for their work. You know, some people worry about an art grade. You know what I told my students? I said, if you try on your picture, I will give you 100%. If you try as hard as you can try, you will get 100%. If you don't try, I don't care if your picture is fine, you get a 0. Because art is life. And if you try in life, you succeed. If you don't try, you fail. Which, to fifth graders, that made good sense. And to me, it makes good sense. Maybe to you, there's a little foggy reasoning there, but it worked for me. Praise your students. Give them affirmation. And give them recognition for trying much more than, turning out a really good product. Thank you very much for coming. God bless you as you teach your children how to draw.